Good afternoon. I'm really glad to be here and talk about social determinants of health, and I'd like to collect a little data to begin. If you are representing a national organization, would you raise your hand, please? Okay, we've got 8 or 9. How about state level? Okay, 7, I see. How about local level? All right, so we've got a spread and no mean here. How about, let's look for another way that we have something in common. How many of us use Healthy People at least weekly in our office? Okay. How about, I saw 7. How about how many of us work in community health assessment and planning efforts? Oh, wow. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Okay, 16. And how many of us consider social determinants of health an essential part of our work? Okay, we're here. We are home. All right. Well, this is what we'll be talking about during my portion, and I'm very interested in what you think, and I'm sure I'm going to try to use a lot of local examples, and if you're from that area, if you would raise your hand and speak, if you have additional information, it'd be great. So I come from a local health department background, and NACHO is the nonprofit that represents local health departments. We will be talking about an eco-social model of health, and we'll be talking about local health department collaborations. We collaborate through community health assessments, community health improvement plans. We collaborate in the policy arena, and we use community engagement as our major methodology for working out in our communities. Common definition that we're all familiar with, that health is not merely the absence of disease, but complete physical, mental, and social well-being. And, you know, I'm afraid to say this, but I think it's true that in public health, we tend to forget about social well-being. Social well-being is critical to health. You can see it in this picture. These people, you know, it's fun to be outside in the fresh air. It's fun to have vegetables that have grown and you've worked on them, but it's also fun to be together. You know, it's fun to come do a presentation and you see a familiar face and your serotonin goes up and you know everything's going to be okay. And these things are automatic in humans, and in our field we need to be thinking about that. The eco-social model of health is a really important model to me. And by the way, I think I'm going to upload these slides to NACHO's website, so if you want these web links, they'll be available soon under the Healthy People section of NACHO, and you're free. Feel free to call me if you can't find it, which could just possibly happen. So first of all, on the eco-social model of health, I'd like to say what it is not. The eco-social model of health does not explain how your community got to where it is. It's like a cross-section of where your community is right now. Now, the great thing about community work is that your community is going to know. It's going to know the history. It's going to know how down by the river, you know, that used to be where the wealthy people lived until the steel plant came and everybody who could afford to moved out. They're going to know that the environment got degraded and the health effects on the people who live there. I'm just thinking about where I'm from, you know, you could talk to people who could tell you about, they remembered when you could walk through those woods, and then they could remember when you walked through them and the seepage was coming up. People know these stories, so they know how they got there, and if you pull your community together, they can start to figure out a way out. So that's one thing that this slide does not exactly do for us. What this slide does for us is it tells us where the community is right now, which is really crucial information. In local public health right now, there is a community health assessment improvement planning process going on in almost every community in the country. NACHO has data that shows that about 70% of local health departments report that they did a community health assessment in the last 5 years. In addition to that, we have pressures on the system to increase that because local health departments undergoing voluntary accreditation have to do one as a prerequisite. In addition to that, the Affordable Care Act has a requirement that nonprofit hospitals do community health needs assessment work or they lose their nonprofit status. So that's a pretty powerful incentive. So hospitals are now out there. One of the great things about this model, using it as a health department or in local public health, if you're working with your hospital and they look at population health in their community, which is not their area of expertise, and they see, let's say, increased asthma rates, their solution, or high asthma rates, their solution might be something medical. It might not be along the prevention end. But you can look at a model like this and you can say, yes, health services is one aspect, but let's also think about collective lifestyles. Let's think about the built environment. Oh, let's think about the natural environment. You can go all kinds of places on this and broaden everyone's thinking at once about what's happening and what the solutions might be. Local health department brings some weight to the conversation. Local health departments usually have some statutory backing to what their work is. They also have in traditional public health, they have the role of standing up for the poor, the vulnerable, and especially for children. So no matter what local organization you're with, partnering with your local health department can bring you closer to solutions. Community health assessment is one arena that uses healthy people towards those solutions. The way we use community health assessments, use healthy people in community health assessment work, is mainly in the goal setting and objective setting area. So in healthy people now, there are over 1,200 measures. The easiest set to use is the leading health indicators. There's only 12 of those. They sort of cover the span of what the basics are that you need to be thinking about in your community. You can start there and with your community begin to thinking about which one of these do we want to focus on. So healthy people is very useful there. The next thing is community health improvement plans. Now, that's what health departments call them. On the nonprofit hospital side, these are often called community benefit plans. That's some new language we're all going to have to learn. But everyone is looking for, and the IRS is looking for nonprofit hospitals to develop community benefit plans that say what we're going to do about what we found in the health assessment or health needs assessment process. So everyone is looking for what these solutions can be. Healthy People has evidence-based practices associated with all of these measures. You can go in there to their website and look up, well, what are some solutions that are known to work. In county government interagency efforts, health impact assessments, and policy analyses, the most useful part of Healthy People that I can see is in those four broad goals when we talk about prevention and health equity and the built environment, and I knew I'd forget one of the four, age span, the whole lifespan approach. So under one of those four rubrics, if you're involved in policy, you can usually think of a connection to at least one, if not more than one of those rubrics. Finally, community engagement. I find Healthy People works very well because it gives a common language. You know, you can be talking to a group of people, and you may have, in low birth weight, for instance, you can have a physician that really knows the clinical piece. You can have some moms in there. You can have nurses who know a whole different set of lifestyle concerns. You can have a whole group of people in there. If they go to the Healthy People website for that problem with maternal and child health, there's a whole section that describes what is known about that area It's written, the language is very user-friendly. It gives a common denominator for people to talk about the problem. So there are many different uses for healthy people within these strategic opportunities for collaboration. I wanted to give a couple examples of community health assessment work at the local level. These two, one is from Norwalk, Connecticut, and the other is from Lansing, Michigan. In Norwalk, Connecticut, they have worked very hard, the hospital and the health department, to try to figure out how we can make this work so that the health department gets its health assessment, the hospital gets its community health needs assessment. We march on together towards our improvement planning efforts, you know, complementing each other. And what they did was they organized a task force. They started with about 40 members. They ended up with over 225 people on their task force. And these 225 people represent partner organizations and community members. They broke those out into three separate task forces. And those three separate task forces then began to look at what are our implementation planning strategies going to be? How are we going to make this happen at our local level? So they used a lot of structure to create a collaborative mechanism. Ingham County was very intentional about their processes for community health assessment and community health improvement planning. They used language about synergistic efforts where nobody's left out, where we take the best of each side of things. They used language where they talked about what the medical model was and what the public health model was and how we weren't going to lose anything from either one of those perspectives, but add them both together to create something that would work for their citizens. They also used a health equity lens, and they said, okay, let's look not just at X, but X plus Y. They tried to look at every problem from a smaller lens to a larger, more upstream lens to look for solutions. It was a very inclusive process, and again, their slides show it very clearly. One technical note in their slides is they were very careful at each stage to involve the community, and they even used the community to help them select the measures. One of the measures that they decided to use was the Gini coefficient for income, which is a way of looking at income, basically how egalitarian your community is in terms of income structure. So, you know, there's a lot of technical detail to this, too, that can support social determinants of health. King County, this is Seattle, Washington, and my cousin just visited me from Seattle last week, so I'm assured that they're just the best in everything. She was there to tell me that. But their county agencies all got together and decided that they were going to do something about equity, health equity, and social justice. It was really remarkable. This report just came out in the past week. But to look at the number of different things that your county government can pull off, it's a lot of different stuff. What they did, considered equity impacts in all decision making, worked to keep youth and adults out of jail, opened new roads for youth, promoted fairness and opportunity in government practices, removed barriers to diversify the workforce, helped smaller firms compete for county contracts. Then two more, engaged about chemical safety through many telenovelas, and engage with the Somali community. Now, the Somali community one, it began as sort of a crisis situation where they had a bad outcome from a local disaster in 2006 where 8 people died, mainly because it was cold. They didn't know, in the Somali community, they didn't know not to use indoor heaters of some kind that had toxic effect on the air. And a lot of people were also hospitalized, including the number of lives lost. So what they did began out of this urgent situation. We've got to talk with these people. They found ways to engage the community. And what eventually happened is that long after they solved this one problem, because they had another environmental problem a couple of years later, another disaster, and they found that they didn't have any deaths and a much smaller number of hospitalizations, and they credited it to this effort. But they kept all the coalitions and all the community groups ongoing after they started it over this one situation. So a lot of this work, you know, is ongoing, and there's no substitute for that. And it is labor-intensive from a staff perspective. Anybody who's done this work knows that. But it's really necessary if you're going to engage the community. The other one that I wanted to mention was they decided as a community that their EMT group, their emergency medical technicians, were just not diverse enough. And this was, you know, this is, a lot of us know that. And they just thought, well, what are we going to do about that? And it was really interesting how they went about it. They got together and set up 5 scholarships. They advertised everywhere for people to come and apply for these scholarships. They had, they thought they'd get a handful. They had over 300 applications. They selected 5 people. They noticed, this is a small detail but so interesting, they noticed that this group of people were a little bit on the outside, because most of the rest of the groups came from a fire department and they all had a fire department t-shirt. So what they did was they made t-shirts for their group. So they came in together with their own t-shirt, and it allowed bonding within that group. And when the session was over and they were all trained as EMTs, or it was over a few months, I guess, they asked for comments and feedback, and what they heard was one person raise her hand and say, well, I really liked that one group, and she named this group, and she said, you know, they were just so interesting, and they brought so much to the rest of us. And I think that's a beautiful example of the wonderful kinds of unintended consequences that happen once we start just plain talking to each other and getting to know each other. This community engagement example comes from Cleveland, Ohio, the Cuyahoga County, which is from the best movie ever made, Major League. That's the reason I can say Cuyahoga County. At any rate, they had a youth photo voice project, and they asked their young people to take pictures and send them in about what was bothering them in their community. And so this one young person sent in, where have all the hoops gone? And that picture of that basketball underneath it. And his written comment, it drives me crazy that the entire city of Lakewood doesn't have basketball hoops. So the community was got that feedback from the health department, took that information, and eventually got basketball courts back up in that neighborhood. So that's just a small example of how community engagement can work. One can see how it begins to build trust, it begins to build social cohesion, and before long, you know, that starts to have a health benefit for the people who live there. So the policy item is from Alameda County, California. It's also a very recent report. Alameda County has done a lot of work through Place Matters, the RWJ initiative, on social determinants. They have a whole list of best practices. Find and foster strong leadership. Dedicate staff resources to the work, and they made the comment that some of the people on your staff, it doesn't have to be their full-time job, but for instance, if your health department can grab the epidemiologist when they need one. It's just very useful. Engage staff from across agencies. And then this fourth one, contribute to building grassroots power. Some of the policy efforts that they were working on involved tenants' rights, and so having grassroots organizations that could speak to actually what was going on out there was very important to making change. Address root causes, partner with community organizations and leaders. Again, this is the kind of thing that's very important and it takes time. Flexible commitment structures is the way they put it. Partner with government institutions across sectors. I'll say to that point that, for instance, if the transportation section of your county government knows that the health department is concerned about the built environment and wants sidewalks everywhere because it will decrease obesity, it helps the transportation people to get through the things they know need to be done. We all need to be working together. Then this eighth one is really interesting. Work reactively and proactively because sometimes things come up. For instance, in 2009, they report that when there was such an increase in foreclosures, that was when there was this huge problem with tenants' rights because all of a sudden ex-landlords were shutting off the water. So, you know, yes, you want to plan ahead and you want to think about social determinants from a big framework, but you also want to be able to respond to these things in the moment when they come up. And use tools that ensure a focus on health equity, and that would include data that makes sense. Health impact assessments, these are already actually posted on NHTSA's website. And I'll just comment that these four are spread across our country. They're not huge health departments, but they are health departments that are recognizing that you have to have healthy habitats, not just for fish, but also for people. And in summary, to influence social determinants of health, we need to be strategic, use community health assessment and improvement planning processes in our communities, use policy analysis, health impact assessments and county government, and remember that it's all about engagement. Thank you.